The world around us is changing rapidly, and your job as a fundraiser or nonprofit marketer is evolving with it. We're Pursuant. We're built by fundraisers for fundraisers, and we've been in your shoes. So we want to bring you tips and tools that you can use to meet you where you are in your current reality and help you go beyond to where you really want to go. You're tuned in to a Pursuant listening experience.
Amidst the climate of uncertainty created by the COVID-19 pandemic, you as a nonprofit leader may be wondering how to approach your budget given the major economic shifts we are experiencing. That's why we enlisted the advice of Sarah Olivieri from Pivot Ground, a budgeting expert and former executive director who helps nonprofits get unstuck when it comes to making financial plans. Hello, hello, Go Beyond listeners. This is Leah here. And today we are continuing our discussion around the COVID-19 pandemic, how it's affecting nonprofits. We have a really special guest with us today. I am speaking with Sarah Olivieri. And Sarah, you are a nonprofit business strategist and a former executive director of a nonprofit. And you have a lot of experience working with nonprofits and their budgets. And I know right now a lot of nonprofits feel kind of frozen. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to move forward making decisions. But in the next month or so, they're going to have to be making some decisions about their next fiscal year. And so with all these discussions around budget, what should we cut? Where should we invest? I thought it'd be a really great time to bring in someone like you who has a lot of experience helping nonprofits around this topic. It's definitely an evergreen topic that doesn't just apply to our current situation, but I thought it would be what better time than the present to bring it up. So could you tell me a little bit about your experience and how you came to some of those aha moments around how nonprofits should approach their budgets?
Sure. You know, I started out working in nonprofits, first as a conference coordinator, quickly became a program director. And it was actually because of that very first conference I was involved with organizing, when I went to pull my final report, the bookkeeper at the organization wasn't able to give me an accurate report, even though I had diligently submitted all of my expenses with categories for them. And at that time, my mother actually was running a small private school and did the books for that. And she said to me, you know, Sarah, you can learn QuickBooks and do it yourself. And so I installed QuickBooks and took home a copy of the organization's bookkeeping. And before I knew it, I was into forensic bookkeeping, essentially, because the money I found had been, the grant money had been spent over and over again and never properly tracked. And then as soon as I was able to do financial bookkeeping and financial planning and program coordination, I quickly found myself an executive director. But I think that in that time, you know, you can't really make an effective plan or effectively deliver your mission if you don't consider the money component. It's true, nonprofits' purpose is not to make a profit that gets distributed, but you do have to have money in the bank. And I think, you know, one of the big ahas for me recently, because that was my initial learning a long time ago, was that you really need to have a good understanding of your money. You can't outsource that. You, as a leader, have to understand how money works. But recently, what I've learned is that so many people are just scared of understanding money. And it really doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be a math person or a numbers person to understand your budget. If you're okay working with numbers between 1 and 100, you can do this. You can understand your money. So it's been really fun for me to start to talk to people about really having a meaningful relationship with their financial numbers. And that allows people to leverage their money to do even more and have the things that they wish they had.
Yeah, I love that. Especially, I had a couple of parallels for me, having also sort of started out managing conferences and events here at Pursuant. And yeah, the budget stuff, it can get really gnarly really quick, especially if you're not, it's not something you're comfortable with. And so I just love from your story how you just sort of took this really practical approach of like, anyone can learn this, anyone can do it, whether or not it's an area where you feel particularly gifted. And so I think that's a really wise takeaway as we're considering how some nonprofits might be experiencing some fear and uncertainty right now when it comes to making some decisions. And so, yeah, I just love what you shared about how you kind of came to be an expert in this. So I wanted to pick your brain on nonprofits right now. They are probably wondering if they should be cutting something from their budget if we're going to be facing some uncertainty or a downturn in the economy that is going to be longer lasting than just the current dips that we're seeing as we're at the peak of this crisis. You know, it remains to be seen what the long-term implications are going to be for nonprofits. So what are some knee-jerk reactions that you would advise nonprofits avoid? And how can we plan, you know, for the best of times or the worst of times when things seem so unstable and unable to predict right now?
Yeah, great question. And I got to tell you, I am super worried about this, because the thing that nonprofits tend to do is the thing I'm sure they're going to do. And it's death. It's the kiss of death. And that is, they start cutting expenses that are connected to activities that actually generate revenue, meaning that you spend money to make money. This is just as true for nonprofits as it is for for-profits. You have to spend money to make money. And if you cut those expenses, you cut your ability to bring in money. And I have a budget template that we're going to put in the show notes. But one of the things I now encourage people to do is in their budgets, in the expense line items, to put a little indicator. I use a bag of money and a heart. The heart represents expenses, expense line items that are delivering on your mission. And the bag of money represents line items that are actually bringing money in. Do not cut the things that are bringing money in. If there is nothing else to cut, you need to start cutting your mission delivering programs, your mission delivering expenses, before you cut your revenue generating expenses. And that's so hard for so many heart-driven nonprofit leaders to imagine. But if you completely run out of money, that's it. You're done. You're not delivering any mission. You're not delivering any program. So better cut a little programs now so that you can ramp up your fundraising activities, your money generating activities. Some of you may have programs that also generate money. So that's why I'm kind of being a little general. That being said, I would say many nonprofits are going to have to change the way they've been fundraising or invest even more into their fundraising efforts. And here's why. If we have a big economic downturn, which we're going to have, it's already happening. This is a sure bet. The donors who you're already reaching out to, what has changed is they might not be able to give you as much. So, right, recession means everybody has less money for the most part. And so donors might have to give you less. But what has not changed in an economic downturn is people's desire to give. People aren't less generous. In fact, people might become more generous. So what that tells me is you need to have more donors in your pool. You need to be ramping up your inflow of new potential donors, as well as, of course, it's always important to work on those recurring donors. But right now, expanding your pool of donors is going to be worth more than it usually is. Does that make sense?
It totally does. I think what you shared about if nonprofits are forced to cut somewhere, cutting from the mission, I mean, that's a hard pill for a lot of nonprofits to swallow. And so I know that when we sort of circled up and talked before, you talked about sometimes recommending that nonprofits consider a loan or consider some investment in order to continue those revenue generating activities. So, I mean, that's one way to go through it. And also, there are probably also going to be some communications objections that nonprofit leaders are going to have to anticipate that they will have to overcome. So what are some recommendations you have around those things, kind of in response to how they're going to have to change the way that they think about their fundraising?
Right. So most people, like they are going to hear, cut our programs. No, we need our programs more than ever. That's true. So if you're feeling that way, you probably need more money. And your problem, let's say you're one of the nonprofits who was raising a lot of money from an event, or just your donor pool has specifically been hit really hard and your donations are way down. You have a cash flow problem right now, more than you have a total revenue problem. If you have a goal to raise, and I'm going to say, let's say your goal is to raise $500,000 every 12 months. And I'm going to come back to why I've said 12 months in just a moment. But if you have a goal to raise $100,000 or $500,000 every 12 months, that's still a great goal. There are still plenty of well-known methods for raising that kind of money. You just might need to change your current method, or you might to expand what you're doing. So that means your goal of $500,000 is still achievable, but you might not have the cash to do it right now if you thought you were going to have a bunch of money in the next couple months from a big event. If that's the case, you need to invest even more without having cash, which means you have to borrow. You might also get a grant. There are some foundations coming through for nonprofits, and the Small Business Administration is giving loans in certain areas. If you're in a disaster area, you might be eligible for a very low cost loan. Definitely look up the rate, but I want to say it's like 2.75 for nonprofits, which is just about the rate of inflation. So basically that is a zero cost loan because the interest rate, if it's roughly the same as the rate of inflation, that's really negligible. So you do want to consider borrowing. And I know that that is scary for so many nonprofits, but don't borrow to keep your programs afloat. Borrow to invest in your revenue generating fundraising, and then just keep your programs as they are.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah Taylor here. I really like what you said that about borrowing to invest, which can be scary for nonprofit organizations. And maybe they're not sometimes thinking about it in that way, but that's how companies invest. That's how companies grow and move forward. And so I think I love that you're bringing that kind of a thinking into this space, because that is how you grow and that is how you do new things and innovate as an organization. So one of my questions for you, kind of on that topic, is what is the difference between, you know, a quote, cash crunch, and the need to, you know, alter your nonprofit budget or think about borrowing? How do you kind of get to that decision?
Yeah. So typically your budget represents a plan for money coming in and money going out over a certain amount of time. Now, typically our budgets are tied to our fiscal year, but I will reinforce again and again, your fiscal year is for the IRS. You as a nonprofit do not have to get all silly and gimmicky about what falls before December 31st and what happens on January 1st or whenever your fiscal year is. You need to be looking at a longer term timeline in your budget. So you should, you know, over the next 12 months, or, you know, don't be so rigid about only looking at your numbers with that sharp fiscal year divide, because it's not helping you. You need to take a longer picture, and some of your investments aren't going to pay out in a single year. And so if you don't take a multi-year picture, you won't really understand which things are having a return and which things aren't. So going back to, you know, does it make sense to borrow, and what is cash flow and budget, right? So the budget is the money coming in and the money going out over a certain amount of time. And as you spend that money, right, you need a certain amount of cash, money to pay your bills. But you might have cash because money just came in, or you might also have cash because you have a bank account full of cash that came in last year or the year before. So just because your income for your budget this year is drastically reduced doesn't always mean you have a cash problem. And also, if you have a cash problem, doesn't mean your whole budget is totally wrong, because you might be getting that money farther down the road. And I think if you act now and you really invest in how you're going to do fundraising in this new context, then you'll know that while we might have less money today than we expected to have coming in the next 12 months, like 6 months down the line, we will be making up for that. We will be mitigating those losses. We'll have a plan to recoup those losses. So our overall income over the next 12 months might not actually be less. It might only be less right now, and that might cause a cash problem. And if that's your situation, you should absolutely invest from your savings account, or if you don't have that, invest by borrowing money. So, you know, that is, it's really important to think about those two differences and that long-term plan. What I can tell you, recently I did a training on how much you should spend on marketing and fundraising. And it really frustrates me that nobody wants to give you a number, like what percentage of your budget. And it's true, every organization is going to be unique, and you need to know how much money you get back when you put money into fundraising. But I took a look at kind of what the nonprofit sector was saying about cost to raise a dollar. And then I looked at the for-profit sector and what they think about, and their equivalent is spending on marketing, what they say about how much of your budget should you be spending. And basically, the answers kind of collided, that there was somewhere around 25 to 30% of your total income that you want to bring in should be going out to things like marketing and fundraising. And that is way larger than most nonprofits are thinking. But if you want to grow, if you want to have more money coming in next year than you have this year, I think those are the kinds of numbers you should be looking at.
Hey there, if you're enjoying this episode, feel free to head over to Pursuant.com/podcast resources to grab our latest free fundraising resources. We update the page weekly, so be sure to check back regularly to get free fundraising ebooks, webinars, and other resources designed with fundraisers like you in mind.
Some amazing truth nuggets in there. I wanted to circle back to something that we mentioned earlier about how it's really important to not cut your acquisition at this time, but it's also really important, from what we've learned from past economic downturns, that it's also really important for nonprofits to invest in stewardship and retaining the loyal donors that they already have, because some sort of nonprofit budgeting financials 101 tells you that it's cheaper to retain a donor than it is to acquire a new one. And so in light of that, I was curious if you have any sort of litmus tests that nonprofits can use to figure out when they're structuring their budget for fundraising and they want to see the breakdown of how much that they should invest in acquisition versus how much they should invest in retaining their current loyal donors. What are some general guidelines that they can use to sort of figure out where to bucket everything?
So I would say, you know, based on logic, right? We're going into uncharted territory. That is the nature of things. But based on logic and what we've seen in the past during a crisis, as well as, you know, what's always true is, yes, retaining a current donor is always going to cost less than converting a new donor. That is always true for donors. And whenever I'm in an emergency or crisis situation, or the world has drastically changed like it just has, the question you need to be asking is, what has actually changed? What is actually new? And what things are actually still the same? So, you know, a person's willingness to give is probably relatively the same, and but slightly increased when we reach this moment of being in community and wanting to reach out and help people. So willingness to give in this kind of situation is going to be up. We saw a huge, you know, outpouring with 9/11, people coming together to help. But as we know from any economic downturn, you don't have to be an economist to know that means most people are going to have less money to give. So that is going to change. But that doesn't mean that retaining a donor is going to become not worth it. You absolutely want to retain your donors. Another way to think about it is, you know, what I said before, right now you want to be expanding your donor pool. So if you add people in to your donor pool, but you have them leaking out the other side, that's not expanding the total pool. So you have to be careful. This comes down to goal setting, right? Don't set your goal of increase new donors. set the goal of expand the total number of donors, right? So if you have a goal of expanding the total numbers, you will keep your current donors and add new ones in. If you only set the goal of adding new donors, then you won't be focused on the big picture, which is total number of donors. And that's what's going to be really relevant.
You know, one other question I've got for you is, do you see any actual opportunity in crisis when it comes to, let's say, a marketing budget? And how would you think about taking advantage of that in a way that doesn't come off as, let's say, tone deaf?
Yeah, I see several opportunities right now in the nonprofits that I'm talking to. One is many nonprofits, you know, their teams have shifted to working from home. And while they can do many things, they can't necessarily do all the things. So a lot of team members actually have a little extra time on their hand. That is an opportunity to turn those people temporarily into an extra workforce to assist your fundraising team or your development team. So that's one opportunity. This is the chance you have to really bootstrap and give your own development team a boost by leveraging that time that's now available if your team's recently shifted to working from home. So that's one opportunity. Another opportunity, of course, is in times of crisis, human beings, we like to be in community. That's why social isolating has been so hard for some people, is so many people like to be together. And one of the ways that really helps people emotionally is to feel that they're part of making things better. So do fundraise, do put the word out. Do not be afraid of making an ask, or if you want to think of it, saying that you need help, because people want to be giving in these times. Even in good times, I like to tell people, you know, if you're afraid of fundraising, of making that ask, saying we need help doing all this work we do, will you please be part of our journey? Is to think of it this way, right? Besides the tax benefit, which only very large donors are really getting, those smaller individual donations, you are giving a positive emotional experience to your donor. What are the other ways those donors might be using their money to get positive emotional experiences? They could be overeating, they could be shopping, they could be, God forbid, they're doing drugs, consuming alcohol. All of those things have some sort of potential for self-harm and destruction. And giving to a nonprofit has no bad side effects. It's all a 100% great, positive way for somebody to feel better. So as a nonprofit, you are creating this outlet for people to have a positive feeling about being part of a solution. So don't shy away from that because you're afraid of burdening somebody. If they can't give, they won't give. But when they can, they'll think of you because you asked.
I love what you just shared, Sarah, about giving people an opportunity to do something to help at this time. And so I think what's really crucial is if those donors that you have that you rely on, if they're not able to give right now or they feel paralyzed by the uncertainty, nonprofits, they can still leverage those donors for the mission in terms of creating resources for them to share or asking them to post on your behalf on social media or even conduct something like a Facebook fundraiser, some sort of online virtual peer-to-peer kind of initiative. So what are some, you know, additional ways that nonprofits can think about engaging their donors at this time, you know, when they may not be able to give? I realize this falls a little bit outside of our conversation around budget, but I think it's an important just point to bring up because it's something that everybody's thinking about right now.
Yeah. You know, I think you as an organization are going to hopefully know your donors. If you don't know them, this is a great time to get to know them. Find out what they're struggling with. Find out what's going on for them. But right, so yes, they can give. You can ask them to give a donation. But other ways, you can tell them what you're doing. You can share the issues you're facing. And then when you have created a solution, you can share that solution. It is okay to be vulnerable. I'll never forget, I had two nonprofit clients at the same time on opposite ends. One was large and had money, and the other was small and didn't have money. And the one that was large said, We're always afraid of making our marketing materials look too nice because people will think we have money and they won't give to us. And the other nonprofit, who is small, said, we're afraid of producing marketing materials because we know they won't look very nice because we don't have very much money. And when people see that we're not good at making marketing materials, they won't trust us and they won't give. Well, both of them were just caught up in their own fears of being vulnerable and real and authentic. But the truth is, it's authenticity that moves people. It's not because you have, you know, or because you don't have. People will give to you if you're authentic. So whatever you're thinking of, pass it through that filter. Is this authentically us? If you're just full of problems and no solutions, put it out there. People want to help that. And if you're coming up with great solutions, then put those solutions out there. Share what issues you had and how you overcame them. You are probably solving issues right now as a nonprofit that are impacting everybody personally, and other businesses of all kinds are all having similar issues right now. And so if you've solved one of those, share that. And if you're struggling like other people, share that and be there in solidarity with them.
I love that you mentioned authenticity. I told you I was just getting off of a webinar presentation myself before this podcast and was talking about authenticity. And a funny thing happened in that. We're all in this moment right now where everyone's working from home. Our kids are home from school. And my son walked in on my webinar and gets in front of the camera and he's like, hi, you know, and everyone's just started dialing into the chat about how they liked it, about how it was very real and authentic. And you're just so right about that. People want to connect with humans. And the more that our nonprofit marketing can lean into that authenticity, the better it's going to do and the better it's going to resonate and actually connect and engage.
Yeah. You know, I talk about this with marketing, but it's true, especially right now, is that I always say marketing, you know, when you want to figure out what to do with marketing, marketing is the combination of two things: human psychology and the context of whatever the moment and method of communication is. And right now, our context has changed, but human psychology has, the way we, what we respond to as human beings has basically been exactly the same for like 70,000 years. So that has not changed. It is not changing. We respond to authenticity, human connection, all those things you just said. It's just our context that has changed. So think about how has the context changed and how can you continue to be all of those things that humans always want with this new context.
Sarah, I've had a great time connecting with you today about this topic, and I know Taylor has too. This has been a really great conversation. So I wanted to bring it home to kind of a final question back to our original topic a little bit, in that, you know, for nonprofits that have their fiscal year restarting in the next few months, what are some goals that they can put in place as they're thinking about their budgets, and how can they forge forward in this sort of brave new world with confidence and knowing that they've got the tools in their toolkit, or they know how to get them in order to be successful in this next year?
Good question. You know, I think we are potentially entering a time where a lot of things will be new, and I think they're going to continue to change for a while. So when it comes to your budget, if you've had really great budgeting in the past, this is a time where you're going to have to look at your budget and say, what worked for us in the past might not work for us going forward. So just put all your assumptions about your budget, if you have great historical data, aside for a moment, and don't assume that just because it worked previously that's going to work. Put it all through the filter of, does this make sense in our new context? Will this still work, or is it not going to work like it did before? If you haven't had a budget, if your board and your key leaders don't really understand how your financial model works, right? We say budget, but what we really are talking about when we're talking about a budget is our financial plan. And if you don't under, and then what you need to have a great budget, it means the budget shows you these are our financial levers. We spend more here, we get more over there. we spend, you know, if we get more over here, we're able to spend over there. That is how we leverage money. And not everything is as we fear it is. Oftentimes, if we spend more money on certain types of employees, we get actually more money in and improve our services to a point. But if we spend beyond that point, we no longer get that much gain or return. So if your budget isn't giving you that information, this is the time to get that kind of budget in place. And because people are scared of numbers, I already built that kind of budget as a template. I'm going to give it away to everybody for free, like I always have, because you have to know your money. If you want more money in your organization, you need to understand your money. If you want to survive a lot of financial changes, you need to understand how those changes are reflected in your own financial landscape. So this is the time don't be scared of the money and really get to understand it. I like to tell people these days that your budget, it's not built for the IRS. It should not be built for a foundation. The most important thing is that your budget is built so that your organization's leaders can understand how your organization works financially. You can make a version for the foundations and a version for the IRS, but if you don't have a version that really explains to you how your money works, get that version now.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much. We will definitely be sharing that plan in the show notes for people to go and grab. Sarah, if people who are listening want to get in touch with you, if they've got a million questions about their nonprofit and they just really would like to put it through some of your expertise, how can people get in touch with you?
The best way is to go to pivotground.com. That's my company, pivotground.com. And if you would like to run your concerns by me, I offer everybody a free 45-minute consultation call, and you can apply for one right on the homepage of pivotground.com. And it is truly a consultation. It's not a sales pitch. Sometimes people send me, aren't you going to send me the deck? I'm like, no, this is a consultation. And at this time, like all of your potential donors, I am doing everything I can to be as generous as possible with my time and my thinking. So if you are looking for a thought partner, I'd be happy to help you, even if it's just for free.
Wonderful. Well, Sarah, thank you again for taking some time to sit down with us and help us approach a topic that is honestly scary for a lot of people, not just nonprofits. And so your wisdom has been really encouraging. And I know everyone, when this episode airs, is going to be encouraged by it. So thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning in with us. Be sure to check out all of the latest and greatest Pursuant resources at Pursuant.com or drop us a line at info@Pursuant.com.